¿Vale?
Hey guys, we do have Jeff Rathke on the phone right now. He's going to be our lender presentation today. I'm just going to give everyone a couple more minutes to log on, and then we'll get started.
Oops. Hello.
Hi. And we're just giving everyone a couple minutes to log on. We have a good amount of people on the call already, which is very exciting. We have a very, very special presenter today. His name is Jeff Rathke. He's from Asset Based Lending. He's on the phone with me right now. But I just wanted to give everyone maybe like 1 to 2 more minutes to log on. I know we do try to start these promptly at 3 o'clock. Just one more minute and we'll get going.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, guys, we might as well just start now. We have a good amount of people on the call, and I know for everyone who's already been on there, you've already heard me introduce our guest speaker today, but we do have a gentleman named Jeff Rathke from Asset Based Lending. They're a hard money lender we work with a lot. They offer great customer service. We love their programs. They're actually the lender I sent that e-blast out last week about that very unique program to the whole team. I also did again today just to reiterate their program and let you know who we have on the call. Everyone is great. There's really no noise, but what I do on these phone calls, guys, is I don't want to mute everyone. So if you are around noise, just mute yourself, and then when it's time for questions, you know, you can unmute your phone. So, Jeff, why don't you go ahead and take it away, and again, we really appreciate you being on the call with us today.
My pleasure, Megan. Thank you for having me. So to repeat a little, my name is Jeff Rathke. I'm Vice President of Asset-Based Lending. ABL is a Hoboken, New Jersey-based company, which has been in existence since 2010. We've done about $250 million worth of transactions in that period of time. I expect to do a little over $100 million in this calendar year. Obviously, a direct lender funded by two guys who came out of Wall Street in terms of background in the hedge fund business, but more importantly, one of the three senior partners has been in the mortgage business for the better part of 25 years, was the head of Morgan Stanley's mortgage division back in the day, was also the founder of one of the larger subprime lenders back in the mid-90s to the early 2000s before the subprime market fell apart. So we have run by people who understand money, but more importantly, have hands-on experience in the mortgage business. I've been a lender for the better part of 30 years. I functioned as a broker, a banker, president of the mortgage division of the savings and loan in Philadelphia for 10 years, and have been on all sides of the table. I've done what you guys do in terms of having customers looking for programs to meet their needs. I've been a banker in terms of dealing with brokers and borrowers directly. Been a lender in terms of making ultimate decisions from a credit perspective in terms of whether they're transactions that we as a lender want to enter into. And I've been a real estate developer. I did 5 deals on my own from properties as small as $200,000 to as large as $2 million. So I've seen pretty much every aspect of the business as it exists over my career. And sort of am uniquely positioned from that perspective to be sympathetic to what you do for a living. One of the things that we pride ourselves on at Asset-Based Lending is customer service, as Megan pointed out. There are a number of quality lenders who are available in the space, the lending space that we reside in. There are lenders who certainly will be more aggressive from a pricing perspective. There may be lenders who will advance greater percentages of funds on a transaction. But I find that the one thing that we have is the ability to have live people on the phone, customer service in terms of accessibility, and a willingness to look at a transaction which may fall slightly outside our underwriting guidelines, understand why it's a transaction we should be interested in, and be responsive in terms of trying to structure a transaction that will work despite the fact if you looked at our guidelines, you might say, well, they're not going to do that loan. I'm continuously surprised as an employee that management of this company will listen and look at transactions which, you know, I look at and say, I don't think we're going to do them, and I'm always regularly surprised and pleased that I work for a company which has the willingness and farsightedness to look at deals on a transaction-by-transaction basis instead of just plugging them into a computer model and making a decision from that perspective. We are a traditional hard money lender, basically running three products. Our basic product is the fix and flip product. Megan has sent out our latest product change, so we are lending up to 90% of the purchase price of property and 100% of the rehab construction part of the transaction, up to 95% of the total deal cost. We define deal cost as purchase price and rehab budget added together. We're capped at 65% of ARV, despite the numbers that I just gave you. And we have one other caveat. We require a minimum investment on the part of our borrowers of $20,000 towards the purchase of the property, which means that the percentages I just gave you are applicable to transactions where the purchase price is above $100,000, but the moment you drop below $100,000, regardless of what the purchase price is, the borrower is going to have to bring $20,000 to the table. In the 5.5 years that we've been in business, we've had two loans that have gone to foreclosure. That's out of about 1,000 loans that have been made. And one of the variables we do stick to is that requirement for investment on the part of the borrowers in a transaction. We find that it heightens responsibility, and from a statistical perspective, it's hard to argue with the performance of our loan portfolio as a result of it. It's one of the questions that I ask immediately when I talk to clients directly from a retail perspective. There are two questions which I ask, frankly, right away. One is cash position, because I want to determine that they're going to meet our liquidity requirements. And the second is price sensitivity. Our interest, our cost of funds run from 11 to 13% from a lending cost perspective, and we charge 2 to 4 points. I'm more than prepared to spend as much time as a potential borrower or broker may need to discuss a transaction, go through its ins and outs, but I like to do it in a conversation where there's at least a chance that we're going to get a transaction done. So trying to qualify a borrower or a transaction based upon the liquidity question or sensitivity to interest rate, I find saves a whole lot of time in terms of transactions, which sound wonderful until the last moment, and the borrower, of course, is looking for 100% financing at 65% or 70% ARV. And clearly in this environment, there are lenders who are doing that. You know, it's not a whole lot of secret. Lending Home has got a rather unusual formula which values properties which are purchased under market value more than it looks at after a rehab value on a property, and, you know, they'll lend 90% on the purchase side, 95% in some circumstances. And I'm never concerned about a transaction that I can't do. I think I'm doing a service to a potential customer by letting them know that we're not the source for them, and there clearly are sources which may meet their needs better than we will. I find that the service component of what we offer in conjunction with what I think are competitive rates and expansive programs from a loan-to-value perspective give us enough value in terms of business that we do that I don't worry about the transactions that we lose. Up until last week, our fix and flip product was a 80% of purchase, 100% of rehab, not to exceed 65% of ARV, or 85% of deal cost. But to remain competitive in the market for the borrower that we're very interested in, which is the experienced guy who's done more than three deals in a year, six over two, with credit scores that are 680 or higher. We like repeat business. We really like establishing a relationship with a borrower. We have an equity program where when we've completed three deals successfully with an individual borrower, we'll consider taking an equity position in the transaction with them, in which case they don't have to bring any money to the transaction. We fund the entire thing, and we do an equity split upon the sale of the property. So we're not exactly a vanilla lender from that perspective. Besides fix and flip, where I guess I should point out our minimum loan size is $75,000. I'm doing a loan right now at $65,000, so again, it's a rule that can be bent as long as there's a good reason for it. Our max is $1,750,000, although we've gone as high as $2.6 million in transactions within the past 12 months. So again, rules that are can be broken under the right set of circumstances. We're very strong in the new construction side. We're lending 50% of land acquisition and 100% of construction under those circumstances, while our fix and flip loans are 12-month loans, which have the ability to be extended to 18 months, two three-month extensions at a 1% extension fee. Our new construction product is an 18-month loan, recognizing especially in places like Philadelphia that licensing and inspection and permitting is a very difficult task to accomplish within any reasonable period of time unless you're using an expediter. And then we do cash out. We prefer to do cash out as blanket funding to help people do 100% financing on transactions where they're acquiring other real estate to either fix and flip or to put in their loan portfolio. But we do straight cash out as well. On a straight cash out, our LTVs are running 40 to 50% max. If it's leveraging acquisition, go as high as 75 or 80%. I mean, that's a deal where people are not actually taking cash out. They're using that cash to support the purchase of another property. We don't love true cash out, although, again, in this world, doing a $575,000 loan, which is true cash out, to help a property owner out of a problem with unpaid taxes from his business. You know, they're one-year loans. We have to believe that there's an exit strategy that will make sense, and there's got to be a story which makes sense under those circumstances. But as I said in the beginning, the nice thing about us is that we'll listen to a story. If it makes sense, we'll try to figure out a way to get the transaction done. So those are our basic product mixes. We lend from Boston, Massachusetts in the north to Alexandria, Virginia in the south, basically the I-95 corridor. We prefer urban and suburban lending to rural lending. We'd rather lend in Camden, Trenton, Newark, Baltimore City than go 50 or 60 miles west of I-95 in Maryland and move out into farmland. Same thing's true here in southeastern Pennsylvania. We're fine in the five county areas, but if you move west of Chester into Lancaster area, we're much less likely to be interested in those transactions. We love inner city lending. It makes us unusual in terms of some part of the marketplace. We think it's easy to establish values and easy to control projects under the circumstances. And most importantly, if the project is priced correctly, time on market is a much more definable variable from an underwriting perspective. And that's not true as you move into the rural areas. We also lend in the three southernmost counties of southeastern Florida. We're lending in Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. There's expansion on the horizon, but one of the things about us, and it ties into the customer service aspect of what we do, is that we won't lend in an area without having a physical presence in that area. So we have reps who are in South Florida. At the moment, we don't have one covering Maryland, Virginia. I'm doing that. We had somebody who we've replaced, and we're out looking for somebody new to cover that area. Obviously, I have from Trenton to Long Beach Island in New Jersey, south through Delaware to northern Maryland, and now I have Maryland and Virginia. We have somebody in northern New Jersey, somebody in the five boroughs of New York, somebody in Connecticut and Massachusetts, and then we have a significant office staff in terms of personnel that handle inbound phone calls and are a first contact point for those people looking for sales information, which then gets referred to our reps in the particular geographic area. So you're always talking to somebody who has an understanding of the market that you're in, understands the neighborhoods, understands the values, understands the issues attendant to functioning in that particular geographic area. So that's, you know, pretty much the long and short of what we do. As I said, we're, you know, 90% purchase, 100% rehab, 11 to 13% on the interest rates, 2 to 4 points on origination, 12-month loans, interest only, no prepayment penalty. Pay us off in a day, you owe us 1 day's worth of interest. If it takes longer than that, you owe us interest until the day that the loan has ended. We extend on performing loans under most circumstances. The reality is, especially on the fix and flip side, the only time we have customers who need to extend are they were looking to refi and something's happened from a credit perspective which makes it difficult for them to refi the way they intended. As I tell every customer that we talk to under those circumstances, unless their credit's dropping below 580, and even under some circumstances, I'll find somebody who's going to refinance us who will be less expensive than we are. You know, when you're paying 11 to 13% in interest over a one-year period of time, no matter how good that underlying transaction is, there has to be a better place to be after that as quickly as you possibly can. And I have relationships at the senior level of, I don't know, 10 or 12 other companies that I refer to on a regular basis to refinance our customers when it's necessary. We do have a program that was much more effective before some of the seasoning requirements changed in the industry over the past 6 months. It's a 3-year acquire and fix to hold. You know, start at a 12% interest, drop to 11% the second year, 10% the third year. It was designed to give investors the ability to stabilize the rent in property which they had rehabbed and increased the value on so that they could go back into the primary market from a refinance perspective. Clearly, though, companies like Velocity have lowered their seasoning requirements, and there are alternatives now which have sort of made that program not as necessary as it was before. The counterbalance in terms of its use is that we don't have a minimum credit score, so in some cases it's nice to know that regardless of you know, credit score, there's a place to park that product and hopefully increase your credit score, increase debt service coverage to make it, you know, financeable someplace else. And our prepayment penalties are 3-2-1s, which are not obnoxious under the circumstances in that product. We've also done some line of credit, pretty much using portfolio investment real estate as the basis for collateral. We'll lend up, you know, give up to 80% value on that collateral. It can be used to acquire additional properties for fix and flip, in which case we're going to look at the acquisition the way we would any transaction, and then instead of asking for cash to come to the closing table, use the equity in the line-supported properties to do 100% financing. I'd say that in the market as it exists at the moment, about 25% of the deals we're doing are basically 100% financing using additional collateral instead of cash. We don't love doing interest reserves, but we'll do them if there's a collateral to do it or if we've got people that are light on liquidity but heavy on collateral. It's part of being flexible as a lender in terms of looking at the circumstances and trying to make sure that you don't turn down a loan because some criteria is missing and try to be creative in terms of figuring out how to make make a transaction work. That's, you know, pretty significant overview of you know, what we do. Again, I'll point out, you know, people, liquidity for us is a big deal. Have to have a minimum of $20,000 in a transaction or the equivalent equity that can be used as collateral. up to 90% on the purchase, 100% on the rehab of a fix and flip for those who have credit above 680, below 680, we're 80% of purchase, 100% of rehab, cash out from 40 to 50% unless it's being used as the base collateral for a fix and flip acquisition, in which case we'll go as high as 75, in some cases 80. I guess I didn't mention on straight purchases, no rehab, just an acquisition, we're 65% of purchase price unless it's a short sale or an REO acquisition, in which case we're the lesser of 85% of purchase or 65% of appraised value. Got to be a product which was not MLS listed, has to be REO or short sale or a private sale, in which case we will break our LTV rules and go to the lower of the 65% appraisal or 85% purchase. Happy to answer any questions. I've been underwriting for a third of my life. There's probably not a transaction that I have not seen. I'm pretty familiar with our competition and what their view of the world is, and I'm happy to share from a lender's perspective what hot spots are in terms of looking at a transaction. You should know that our loan officers and sales reps are responsible for the write-up of a transaction. You know, we ask for our application, which is a three-page application, which is a lot simpler to deal with than a Fannie Mae 1003. We like to get an agreement of sale and list of the scope of work with budget and application, and we basically will issue a loan term sheet off of that. No money collected up front, no money until a loan term sheet is accepted by the customer, in which case the first fees they're going to pay are going to be appraisal fees, which obviously vary geographically and by the type of property. We lend on 1 to 4 families. We lend on multi-units. We've done up to 20-unit financing. We do a lot of mixed-use work. We don't do a lot of pure commercial. The only commercial stuff that we've really done recently has been some small strip center cash-outs. So we are not a great commercial lender, although we'll look at it. That's pretty much all I have to say.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you so much for the presentation, the overview of the program. That was amazing. Gives us all a great idea of everything you guys do. Obviously, I know what you guys do. Hopefully, everyone has the latest program I sent up in front of you. But, guys, if you have any questions for Jeff, why don't you go ahead and ask him some questions?
I couldn't have been that good that there's not a single question, huh?
We have a good amount of people on the call, but just this happens a lot. Sometimes people get a little nervous. We actually have a gentleman on the phone who is a real estate investor. I'm just wondering, do you have any questions at all about the lending programs that Jeff just explained? All right, Jeff, I guess you were just that great at your presentation, which it was very comprehensive. Yeah.
Either that or I put them all to sleep, Megan.
No. A lot of times people just don't have any questions. Maybe some people on the phone call are a little newer, so they just maybe are a little afraid to ask any questions. But
Megan, is the audience more your kind of, your related brokers and originators than it is investors?
So we, the people that we are recruiting, you know, to build our sales force, we obviously are looking for people that are already experienced and in a business and know how to initially kind of at least vet out a deal. When we vet out a deal here, we always ask for a loan submission, a tri-merge credit report on all principals, and all of their personal financial statements, you know, and just for that very reason. Most lenders, and I know you guys are very big on your post-closing liquidity requirements and other cash reserves, but most lenders are pretty big on that as well. Most lenders they want the borrower to have at least 6 months of mortgage payments on hand or they won't do the deal. Unless you are like a Velocity or an Apex or an Assets Capital or something like that, they just recently changed those requirements though, which you probably know. You know, Velocity, yep, for the longest time, you always had to have 3 months on hand. They just changed that. So we just request those three documents really so we can vet out a deal. If it's a deal where there's any type of renovation or construction involved, or if it's a bank loan, we always need the borrower's professional resume. You know, and really those four documents can tell us how experienced is this borrower. You know, let's look at their tri-merge. Are they paying their bills? Where are their FICO scores at? How much cash do they have on hand? Do they have other properties somehow to make this work? And, of course, you know, the loan submission just generally tells us what they're trying to do. But, yeah, so we do have some newer people that we've brought on, but almost everybody that we've brought on does have some type of relationship to already commercial lending, whether they are a real estate investor themselves or a small business owner. We had a residential realtor sign up, and we have a commercial mortgage broker, or sorry, commercial, not a commercial realtor. Why can't I think of the name? What is the official name for commercial realtors? I don't know. I'm drawing a blank here, guys. But we've had a couple realtors sign up.
I'm going to take 2 minutes and tell your audience something which for me has stood me in very good stead, but I will tell them that from a lender's perspective, it mm-hmm. will get deals done for them that will not get done otherwise.
Well, thank you, Jeff. No, there's always, you know, like that one deal we worked on with that one guy, I can't think of his name, there was almost no way that was getting done. But, you know, you guys, you really tried your hardest on that. You know, if there was any company that could have possibly tried to make it work, and I told the borrower right up front, this is going to be nearly impossible. You know, we try our best, and it's hard to have those conversations sometimes with borrowers that, hey, there really is no deal here, you know, but my job here is to make sure all the loan reps here are working on deals that are going to make them and the company money. So, you know, sometimes you do have to have those conversations with borrowers. And, you know, sometimes I don't want to preemptively say to someone you don't really have a deal, even though obviously we have a lot of experience in the industry. But, you know, there's sometimes once in a while a borrower does get a deal done somehow, and I have no idea how it happened. So
yeah, we all make mistakes.
Yeah, well, listen to this, though. I had a woman out west that went to purchase. She actually owned a dog park. It was like 27 miles of dog park. It was huge. Her credit was horrible, like in the 500s. So basically this is just a piece of land. She's been renting it for, I don't know, 5 years. I don't have the file pulled up in front of me, but her lease was going to expire and her business was thriving. She wanted to purchase this. She wanted to purchase the dog park, but she had no down money. So, you know, me and you looking at this deal, you know, I said to her, if your FICO was better, you should definitely go for an SBA bank loan, which would only require 10%, plus, of course, your third-party closing costs, and you would need your post-closing liquidity. But that would be the least amount of down money. I have no idea how she did it, Jeff, but she got a hard money lender to come in and do 100% financing for her. But me and you looking at that would be like there's no deal there. You know?
Well, I've certainly come, and you're right, I wouldn't have entertained it for a second. I've certainly come to understand that there are hard money lenders in the marketplace, and this is certainly true of the individual private lender whose view of a transaction is completely different from a motivational perspective than those of us who are more institutional in nature. You know, they mm-hmm. have a certain set amount of assets to deploy. They have an amount of time to deploy those assets in. In some cases, they have an emotional tie to the particular property or industry that they're looking at, and they will make decisions on a case-by-case basis, which you and I would never make. But I've learned not to be surprised by some of the loans that get done. So here's my 2 minutes to loan officers, originators, in terms of how you get a lender to like you and be more interested in your transaction. Because clearly, you know, Megan's comments about what you require from an information perspective are a perfect dovetail for what we're looking for. I know when I get a loan from Megan, I don't have to ask for any other information at first view in terms of what I'm going to get to take a look at a deal. So this isn't aimed at Megan and the way she teaches. I am always amazed that I get submissions on loans with no argument on the part of the submitting broker as to why I should be doing the loan. It's not enough from a lender. Look, every loan I look at, for the most part, is going to be pretty close to my guideline. And if I'm looking at that loan in a vacuum, I'm the one that has to decide why I want to do the loan. If you want to increase the percentage of loans that you get lenders to approve, you have to tell that lender why he wants to do the deal. You're a salesperson. You're not just selling your potential borrower in terms of doing business with you, but you're selling the lender as to why he should be doing the transaction. So, you know, executive summaries in which the strengths of the transaction are highlighted go a long way to getting me to view a transaction in a more favorable light. So if you've got a guy who's short on cash, but the LTV is remarkably strong and he's got history, which shows he's got the ability to complete a project successfully, you want to highlight the strengths. You'll have guys that have low credit, you go to something else. But if you just put the loan in front of the lender, you leave the lender with no roadmap other than his own guidelines to decide why he should be interested in the transaction. I can't tell you how many times I go back to brokers or go back to the submitting originator and say, you know, you got to tell me why I want to do this loan, because if I'm looking at it, I don't see where it's a loan as a lender that I want to be involved in. It's close, but it doesn't get me there. You should never allow the lender to come back and ask that question. You know, you should be controlling the process from your perspective. And if somebody like me doesn't listen under the circumstances, well, you know, maybe I'm stubborn and I'm not hearing you. But I'm telling you, and I've been a lender for over 20 years, the more you sell the lender, the more you make that roadmap clear, the strengths of your customer, the better chance you have of me saying yes or me saying, okay, I'll move on this variable because there's enough strength in the transaction and some other aspect of it for me to be willing to take the risk. And it sounds foolish and it sounds simple. I'm telling you, it's the most important lesson I could ever leave to somebody who's originating loans. You got to sell the lender. Otherwise, you're just one more loan in the 25 loans I'm going to look at in the next 12 hours.
Yep, couldn't agree with you more, Jeff. That was very, very great advice. With our loan reps, actually, I make their job very, very easy. They just have to really get me those three documents, like I said to you. I told you, sorry, the executive summary, personal financial statement, tri-merge. Of course, bio, if this is any type of rehab or construction or a bank loan. And I'll take that over and talk to the borrower and get more details if I have to and keep them totally updated. So we make their job extremely easy here, but our goal is also to teach them the business, and that's why we do these calls. And we want to thank you again so much for your time and getting on the call with us and explaining everything you have. You know, someone that's had so much experience in this business. You know, me as being even a younger individual, I've only been in this business for almost 6 years. You know, people don't understand. These are the type of individuals I'm working with, though, that have taught me the business. All the lenders that I've worked with, you know, gentlemen like you, all the other lenders I've worked with, I've learned from some of the best people in this business and been smart enough to take their advice and not be bullheaded like a lot of brokers are. And that's really how I've learned from the great wisdom of all the lenders that we've worked with. So, again, we just want to thank you so much, yeah, for the call and for everything, explaining your program, giving them advice. But, yes, you know, this is exactly how the business is, and this is what we got to do, guys, to get loans done.
Hey, Megan.
The opportunity.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, this is Ryan. Jeff, I had a question. Do you work with a lot of investors who are purchasing share sales?
Yeah, it's a great question for a number of reasons. Yeah, it's a real challenge for us as a lender because rarely is there title insurance available for the lender in that transaction. Most sheriff sales are cash purchases. It takes time for the deed to be registered in the appropriate jurisdiction, despite the fact that cash and closing takes place. So, for instance, in Philadelphia, you have a minimum of 30 days from the time a sheriff sale is completed to the time that the deed is registered in the county registrar, which means that no title company can issue a title policy, which means that I can't lend on that transaction. Having said that, I have a number of clients who will buy at sheriff sale for cash, and then on the day that the deed is registered, we will do a shadow transaction basically will fund the deal as if we had done the purchase money mortgage, give them back the cash that they laid out at the transaction minus what they would have had to put into the transaction from our perspective, because the moment we can get title insurance, you know, we're fine with the loan. But sheriff sale transactions from a lender's perspective at the moment are very difficult. And the adjunct to that one is that short sales, REO sales, which are being handled for institutions by national title companies, are also a problem, because you'll find that your buyers are making cash offers. In most cases, they're doing it individually. And then when they go back to the seller, the title company, and say, by the way, I've got a loan that I want to use to fund the purchase, they run into real issues in terms of it being hit and miss as to whether or not they can do that. So Wells Fargo, for instance, their national title company in Wells Fargo, is almost impossible to get to allow a hard money lender to step in and lend on a transaction which has been a short sale. Bank of America is very tough as well. So we're happy to do the transactions, assuming that we can get title insurance and the seller will allow the contract to be assigned to the entity that's borrowing money from us, and they'll allow any money to be borrowed on what's, you know, basically a cash offer at the time that they accept it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Ryan, that's always a question. Almost every single real estate investor I speak to asks me that question, and it's, you know, Jeff obviously gave a much more detailed response, but I don't know any true lender that actually does lend on, you know, sheriff sales and stuff like that. Now, Jeff, I don't know if it's your company, but there are some companies out there that will offer, you know, say like a line of credit, if you want to call it, off of existing properties if they already have an established portfolio, of course. And that money potentially could be used to buy a property, but I still think that the title insurance problem would still be an issue.
Right, so we'll do that. You know, we'll make a line of credit available based upon real estate portfolio, but it doesn't change the fact that assuming that there's the collateral is enough so that the free cash is available for that purchase to take place, that purchased collateral does not get added into the borrowing base until such time that we can get title insurance and have a security position in it. So you're right, Megan. You can do a purchase by doing a cash out against an existing line of credit, but it's still the same problem in terms of us getting security position in the newly acquired real estate so that we credit back against their line of credit the amount that we would have lent on the transaction to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, those are very, very tricky deals. Guys, does anyone have any more questions for Jeff at all? All right, Jeff, I definitely want to cut you loose so you can get back to your work day. Again, I just want to thank you so much for jumping on this call with us. I send you a recap email. But, again, Jeff, thank you so much for your time. And, everyone, have a great week.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye, Megan. Bye, everybody.